As promised, we are joined right now by the head football coach at Pittsburgh. Seventh season with the Panthers, 2013 Broyles Award winner. He led Pitt to a divisional title in 2018. They are 8-2 and number 18 in the college football playoff rankings. They are at Pitt on Saturday. Virginia is. That's going to be a big game. We are joined right now by Pat Narduzzi. Pat, what's going on? It's good to have you back. How are things?
Hey, Jim. How you doing? It's great to be on today. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, it's good to have you back, Pat. Thanks so much. You are in the top 20. You're in first in your division. You've got a Heisman candidate at quarterback. So bottom line things for me. How is life for you right now, and what is the vibe like around the program?
You know, the vibe around the program is great. I mean, we've got a Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback who I think is the best quarterback in the country. I'll throw that out on your show. We've got a semifinals for the Biletnikoff and Jordan Addison at receiver. And I think we got a young safety, Brandon Hill, who's also a finalist for the Thorpe. Again, I should say it's finalist, semi, whatever that finalist is, but he's at least on the Thorpe watch list, I guess. So things are great in Pittsburgh. You know, we're getting cranked up for another one this weekend. We had fun last week on a Thursday night at North Carolina, and we're looking forward to the Cavaliers coming into Pittsburgh.
Pat Narduzzi is my guest. All right, Pat, you talked about your quarterback and him being the best quarterback in the nation right now, Kenny Pickett. Let me ask you, what separates him from all the other great quarterbacks in the nation?
You know, I think, I think the first thing is maturity. There's a lot of quarterbacks out there that I just don't think can do what he does. He comes from a pro-style offense. So when I think, best quarterbacks, I think about the quarterback that's going to be the guy in the future to start in the NFL and be a guy that can win a Super Bowl with somebody. That's what I see is, there's a lot of times there's great quarterbacks that run for a lot of yards and throw for a lot of yards, and a lot of it's RPOs. There hasn't been one RPO. It's this guy's handing the ball off or he's dropping back like a pro quarterback has to do. And you talk about ready made for the NFL. He actually knows how to take a snap under center. It's not all shotgun. So it's not I don't want to call it, gimmick offenses out there, but it's not, Lyman running down 3, 4, 5 yards down the field and throwing passes. That's not where he's getting his work done. He's a drop back, read the coverage. Again, pro-style quarterback is what I see, but athletic enough to be a guy who can beat you with his feet.
Right, Pat, and then all the other intangibles. For instance, everything you just said, but I had him on the program earlier this season. Man, there is so much to like about his game and his poise, his composure, his ability to lead from the front. When did you first realize that you had a chance or had something in him that was going to be very special?
You know, we knew it in his freshman year, okay? And you're going to say, come on now, okay? He was a scout team quarterback. I thought he was special, okay? We've got another special quarterback on the scout field, I thought, this year as well, but won't get into him. But I thought he was a special quarterback as a freshman, and I'll take you back a little bit here, and I don't want to get long-winded because I know we only have so much time here. But in Kenny's freshman year, he's on scout field. We go play at Syracuse. He travels, of course, with us. Max Brown, our starting quarterback, goes down, dislocates his shoulder. And I went out there to see him, Jim, and like you do every player that goes down on the field, you've run out there going, hope it's not bad. And I get out there, I look down, it's dislocated shoulder. I'm looking at him. He's wincing. He's not feeling good. And at that point right then, I said, Kenny Pickett's going to have to play. We were trying to get through and redshirt him, put him on a scout field, let him grow up and in a natural way, not try to have to push him to action. He wasn't the first quarterback in that day. We had another backup. I won't mention his name, but I just knew he wasn't the guy, and I knew Kenny was the guy. So we knew back then that's a true story, and people kind of criticized me after the game because I played another quarterback after that. Kenny Pickett threw the last pass of the game, and they're like, you put him in for one play, you blew his red shirt. And again, the rules back then weren't, four games like they are now. So, but my plans all along were, when I went out there to see Max Brown, that, I knew Kenny Pickett was going to have to play, and I knew he was special at that time.
You knew what you had. Pat Narduzzi is joining us now again, and you mentioned this, Pat. It's not just Pickett who's having a huge year. Earlier this week, you dropped by the receiver's room to tell Jordan Addison to call his mom. For those who do not know, what was that all about?
I got the word right. I usually have a weekly Monday noon press conference, so probably 5 minutes before my press conference, our sports information guy says, "Hey, he's a semifinalist for the Biletnikoff Award. Jordan Addison is." So I was like, "Wow!" So I called his mother, Keisha, who is just the sweetest lady in the world. and told her and said, hey, you know, do you want me to call him or and tell him, or do you want to tell him? She goes, you know, maybe you. And I said, you know what, I think you need to do it. So anyway, mom was going to call him. So as I'm walking down the hallway to my press conference, I walk by the receiver room, and he's in there. So I kind of popped in there, probably being late for my noon meeting, and said, hey, Jordan. I said, hey, did your mom call you? Have you talked to your mom? And he goes, she called me, but I'm watching film. You know, I was like, listen, your mother calls you, answer the phone. So I said, call her back right now, okay? So he called her back, and he got the information, you know, from her as she gathered, you know, his brothers and sisters on the phone at the same time. She wanted to have everybody on the phone together and tell him. So it was a special moment.
So let me ask you this, Pat. I would imagine, I'm not there, but I would imagine he probably took that in stride. It did not change expression. Like, could you even tell that he was receiving good news?
No, not at all. Not at all, because I was, you know, I asked him actually last night. He said, by the way, when I, you know, left you in that room, like, you did, you know, when I gave you a fist bump because I had to go to the press conference, did you already know at that point? He said, yeah. But that's who he is, Jim. He's just a laid back, you know, just do my job. You know, we talk around here about list guys. The guys are on list. Missed study hall, missed this, late for this, you know, missed a tutor, you know, whatever it may be. We try to chart everything. And Jordan Addison is just is great a kid and football player. I mean, just like there's no issues with him. It's like it's so refreshing in this day and age to have a guy that's usually sometimes your best players are the most high maintenance. He is low maintenance, special, and he didn't really care. He's just like, you know, it just doesn't matter to him. It doesn't faze him.
Pat Narduzzi is my guest. Pat, I wonder, like, that's a coach's dream, right? When one of your best players has got that kind of approach, that kind of process, that kind of mentality, is it contagious? Does it rub off on other guys? I mean, you certainly hope so, but does it?
You know, not no. Yeah, I don't think so.
I agree.
You
know, I'm with you on that. I hate to say it, but I agree.
It really doesn't. I wish I could tell you. Maybe it's one or two. Maybe there's one guy or two guys that would have gone, you know, a different direction. But it certainly doesn't bring everybody in there. But I know this, when you talk about an example of, hey, you can be a great player and not have to, you know, show everybody. You can score a touchdown and hand the ball to the official and do it the right way, as opposed to having to have a dance and do this and do that. You know, Jordan's that type of guy. You tell him one time and he does it, and that's why he's a great player. You tell him, you know, run fast and plan off your eighth step and take a left, and he's going to do it exactly the way you ask him to do it. And he's what coaching is all about. He's fun.
All right, so you've got Virginia coming to your place on Saturday, and you've got a chance to win the division with a win on Saturday. I would ask you if that feels stressful, but knowing you a little bit, Pat, I know that you're going to tell me no, but let me ask you this. Like, how do you look at stress? What do you do with stress? And what do you want your players to do with it and view it?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. People have been talking about this lately, but, you know, we talk about there's stress and there's pressure, and, you know, stress is bad. And to me, stress is when you aren't prepared. Pressure is, there's pressure. There's pressure throws, pressure, you know, blitzes, whatever it may be. But, you know, when you're prepared for a game mentally and physically, there is no stress. I mean, you'll get butterflies before a game, but I'm never, you know, stressed out. If you feel a pressure of a big game or a game, and all games are, you know, I don't care if we play New Hampshire. We beat them 77-0 or 77-7 earlier in the season. But you know what? I was as prepared for that game as any of them. But you're still going, you know, we can walk out here and lose this football game too. And you would think you'd walk into that game feeling really confident, like we're going to kill these guys. But it's not like that. So I think you approach every game the same. And again, stress and pressure, you know, pressure, you put it this way, Jim, you're taking a test when you were back in college. Remember taking that test that you weren't prepared for? And you didn't study for, you didn't know what the heck you were doing. You walked in there, you're like, oh, God, this ain't going to be a good day. That's stress, okay? But when you walk into that English class or that math class and you know what you're doing and you know what's the content, you know how to line up, you know what coverages are going to run, there's no stress. So preparation is the stress killer.
Preparation breeds confidence. And Pat, you have no idea how much that analogy you just made resonates with me. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because my listeners know this story, but I'm a guy in his 50s now, Pat, and I still have reoccurring nightmares of that very test you're talking about in college because I was not prepared. They don't come as often as they used to, but I'm telling you, Pat, I get this. And I'm not even laughing because it's real. Every time I have that dream, Pat, it's real that I had not gone to class all quarter. I didn't know where to find the professor. I didn't know what the office hours were. And it's because of what you said. I was not prepared.
There's no doubt about it. When I laugh, it's because it's so, hey, I think I have still nightmares sometimes about like I'm back in college and I'm not ready for that test.
Yes, right.
And that's why you've been a huge success because you have, you found a way to get it done but you've prepared the rest of your life and you were probably more prepared but not as prepared as you wanted to be.
That's exactly it. I mean, how much more successful might I have been if I had actually prepared for those tests? No, but you're right. You're right. Listen, I mentioned it off the top, Pat. It's hard to imagine, but you are in your seventh year already with that program. Time flies, and it feels like it was just yesterday that you got that job. When you look back at where things were when you arrived and where they are right now and how much the program has grown, what kind of thoughts do you have and how much pride do you have in it?
You know, I have a ton of pride. You know, there's a reason I came here, and it is really hard to believe that you've been here 7 years. You know, that doesn't happen in coaching anymore. Usually it's three and you're gone, whether you get fired or you take another job. So I'm blessed to be here. It's a great university. We do a great job coaching, and we do a lot of details. We have the opportunities every week to watch other games. Last week, beating North Carolina, we had put it this way, Virginia, we've got a four-game breakdown on them. We've played Bronco four times, Fuente, who's now gone at Virginia Tech, great person, great coach. But we had a 5-year breakdown. So when I say a 5-year breakdown, we get to go back and watch 5 years worth of, we have a cut up just meant to that. What are they like against us? When you talk game plans, sometimes you're looking at game plans and they might like this pass concept against one team, but they don't like it against another. But I think, based on your style of offense or defense, teams are going to try to defend you the same way. If they thought, Bronco defended us back in 2019 was the last time we played them in the opener, but they defended us that day, there are going to be some similarities to how they defended the same type of offense and the same type of defense. So there's similarities. So you get to go back and look at those things. So to answer your question about the development of the Pitt program, I go back and look at some of these old school, and I'm watching like my first year, 2015, and I'm watching our players on the field, and I look and I'm like, wow, we are a lot better. We know what we're doing. We look different. We play different. It's real. And this program is on the rise, Jim. We had 7 guys drafted last year. We got, we'll have at least 4 guys go to the Senior Bowl this year. It's not stopping. We're just continuing to do a great job recruiting players. We do a great job developing players. And this place is a gold mine. We've won 9 national championships. We got 25 first-rounders and 9 Hall of Famers. And Jimbo Covert being the last one who was inducted this last summer. But there's going to be plenty more with Larry Fitzgerald and LeSean McCoy, and you keep going and going.
Damn, Pat, I wish I had eligibility and talent. I love that. Listen, one last thought, and part of this is about you, though. Now, you played linebacker. You came up on the defensive side of the ball, but the story goes that last year you started going to offensive meetings. You told The Athletic, quote, "I'm no offensive guru, but this is about being in there, knowing and having input and putting ideas out there." Why was that important to you, and how valuable is that time spent in the offensive meetings?
Well, it's just being more aware. And again, Coach Whipple does a great job, but like I'm a defensive guy, so I understand tendencies and I understand, what we're looking at. So I just wanted to be more involved, and I got involved in the off season. Really started getting a little bit involved, Jim, last year in our open week, of just making sure, we're formationally doing the right things out of it and just saying, hey, this formation here, all we do is run out of it, and this one we pass out of it. So I just try to at least look at it from a defensive perspective about what we look at and try to put it together. We did that at the end of the year and then, watched off-season cut-ups about what we needed to do. We've cut down our run game as far as how many different concepts we're doing. What are we doing? What are we doing well? Let's get rid of the ones we don't need. And I think our offense has done an outstanding job of just, and again, I didn't do anything. I'm just, like you said, a dumb defensive guy.
I said you were a defensive guy. I did not say you were a dumb defensive guy, Pat.
I say I'm a dumb defensive guy.
All right. No, I actually love that. And one last thought, you mentioned that the great, great tradition of this program, the NFLers that you mentioned, are they good about coming back?
Yes, they sure are. I mean, Aaron Donald was back this week lifting here because they were open this week. They all come back. I mean, LeSean McCoy's come back. Deion Lewis has been back. They all come back. Larry Fitzgerald's been back. Tony Dorsett comes back all the time. Dan Marino, he comes back all the time. We golf every summer together. You know, he was down when we were, you know, clinching last year, 2 years ago, the Wake Forest game. We went down and beat Wake Forest to clinch the Coastal Division of the ACC. He was in that locker room afterwards with Jimbo Covert. And, you know, so they all come back. That's the other beautiful thing about it. Not only do they come back, they give back. And a lot of those former NFL players don't really give back in a lot of places.
I'm trying to let you go, Pat, but one last thought. Like Aaron Donald coming back on a bye week in lifting is absolutely incredible. How do the guys, how do the players respond when they see a legend like that just throwing the weights around?
You know, Aaron Donald, I mean, you know how long he's been in the NFL. He's a real guy. He's got a locker in our locker room. Our guys love when Aaron comes back. He lives, I mean, he's here all summer. He lives here in Pittsburgh. He's got a home in Pittsburgh. He grew up in Pittsburgh. And he's back. Our players love it. I mean, it's just like, and you watch his work ethic. Our guys learn as much from Aaron Donald and what he does and how he acts when he's in the summer. You know, he held out, I want to say, you know, not last year, the year before, you know, prior to COVID, but he was a holdout in camp and was here almost all of our training camp, it seemed like. I mean, he was here every day during double sessions, out on the field watching and being around our kids. So he's an incredible person. And I might add, Aaron Donald, you know, is as young as his NFL career has been, as successful as it's been, has already given back a six-figure amount to the University of Pittsburgh. So he's special in many ways.
That is so great. Pat, I want to say this from me to you. I really appreciate you. I normally don't want to keep a guest as long as I kept you, but the reason I did that, you're a rare guest. I mean, you're somebody who's locked in. Your energy is great. Your passion is apparent. You're not giving me cliches. I mean, that is such a great conversation that you and I have, and I always look forward to it, Pat. So I want you to know that, and I want you to know how much I appreciate it.
Hey, Jim, I appreciate that, and my phone is always open. So you want to talk, you want to have a good conversation, bring Pat Narduzzi on and the Pitt Panthers, okay, Jim?
My man, you got it, Pat. Appreciate you. Good luck this weekend. You got a big one. Pitt, 8-2, number 18 in the college football playoff rankings. Pat Narduzzi, my guest. I know this already. I know that if I want a good conversation, I know where to go to get it. That guy, great energy, great passion, and he's done an amazing job with that program. 8-2, number 18 in the college football playoff rankings, and they've got a big one on Saturday. They're at home against Virginia. All right, you know what it's like? When you get a guest like that, it's like sitting down and playing blackjack, and you get on a heater, and you got a good hand, man. Keep playing, keep playing, keep playing. That's what it is. I sat down at a hot table. I'm going to play that thing as long as I possibly can.